Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Neil Garfield Show, a presentation sponsored by www.livinglies.wordpress.com, GTC Honored, and The Garfield Firm, serving all 50 states with news and analysis of the latest bank scams against borrowers, homeowners, consumers, and investors, and providing legal representation throughout Florida. This program is for general information only. It is not a solicitation for services or legal representation and should never be used as a substitute for advice from a licensed professional. And now, here's world-renowned financial expert, attorney, and blogger, Neil Garfield.
Hi, this is Neil Garfield, and this is Thursday, February 26, 2015. Do banks lie? Yes. According to Judge Rakoff in the Southern District of New York, when he considered a motion filed by Bank of America to overturn a $1.3 billion, with a B as in boy, billion-dollar verdict finding the bank had committed fraud, he said that Bank of America had utterly failed, those are his words, to meet their burden, and that the evidence of misrepresentation was overwhelming. So the answer is yes, banks lie. We are living their lies every day that they collect money on loans they don't own and shouldn't be servicing and don't represent the owner. We are living their lies every day they show up in court to get a foreclosure judgment. And it is time for the courts to exercise their right and their obligation to give every allegation close judicial scrutiny before allowing the forfeiture of someone's home. If a loan is defined by Regulation Z and the Truth in Lending Act as predatory per se, then on what grounds can a court of equity enforce a mortgage and require the forfeiture of the property? Predatory per se means that it is inherently illegal in and of itself without further proof. If it is predatory per se, then why isn't it unenforceable per se, except by perhaps asking for some recovery on some other grounds? Assuming there's room for some party to plead that they were not part of the scheme to induce a borrower into a predatory loan. If it is enforceable, then what is the point of calling it predatory? Courts don't like a free house for homeowners, but they seem to have no problem giving a free house to complete strangers, strangers that loaned no money, strangers that don't have any authority to enforce the loan, strangers that don't know and don't care what balance, if any, there is on the original loan after receiving multiple payments of the entire loan and multiple payments for parts of the loan from multiple parties, each of whom thought that they were either buying it, guaranteeing it, or insuring it. Strangers to any alleged default. If the creditors got paid, why is anyone allowed to claim a default? We just had a case like that in South Florida not long ago. Why should this be a problem for borrowers who had nothing to do with the illegal scheme cooked up by Wall Street banks? Under the Federal Truth in Lending Act, known as TILA, and Regulation Z, more often referred to as Reg Z, which is promulgated by the Federal Reserve, they are required to rule in favor of the homeowner where there is violation. Those violations have to do with disclosure requirements, and the disclosure requirements are meant to be tough, and so are the teeth in TILA. The courts move slowly, but when they move, things happen. The U.S. Supreme Court just proved that a few weeks ago for the homeowners who had a copy of a rescission letter that they put in the mail. They don't have a mortgage anymore. There's no encumbrance on their property, and they don't owe any money on the note. They may still owe money to somebody, but it has to be a creditor that can actually claim to have a loss. Those laws and rules require complete disclosure to the borrower before he signs any paperwork and gives the borrower 3 days to rescind for any reason at all and 3 years to rescind it if the disclosure was incomplete or wrong. In almost all cases, the disclosures were wrong, misleading, and withheld vital information from the borrower. If the borrower knew that there were a dozen other parties involved in his loan and that they were all getting paid big money for doing it, the borrower would have known that he could shop with another lender where the middlemen could be eliminated. And he might have gotten a less fraudulent appraisal. And TILA requires that they return all of the compensation to the borrower once the borrower finds out about it if the information was withheld. Tonight we explore rescission a little more deeply again because of the number of questions that we have received. I am broadcasting live from a very warm Boynton Beach, Florida, brought to you by the Living Lies blog, GTC Honors, AMGAR, the Garfield Firm, with offices in South Florida, and this show is specially brought to you because of donations to the Living Lies blog from listeners like you. Thank you. And for those of you who are not yet contributors, we ask that you call 954-495-9867 and pledge whatever you think you can afford. Our mission is to share as much information as we can to help beleaguered homeowners and other people who may not even be aware of the effect the housing crisis has had in their lives. If you've lost a job or being paid less or you're losing benefit, it is most likely caused, at least in part, by the banks who suck the life out of our economy. Despite tremendous advances in the court system, I have personal knowledge of judges who still can't get their minds around the idea that the whole mortgage mess was and still is a fraudulent bank scheme. They don't buy the idea, the judges that is, that the homeowners are victims and not deadbeats. And the judges are bending the rules, still bending the rules, in favor of the banks to the point that they are breaking the rules they think they are bending. Motions to strike affirmative defenses turn into de facto summary judgments. Even motions to compel discovery result in rulings that can obliterate all the borrower's defenses. But now those rulings are getting reversed, and the judges who were reversed are perplexed because they still can't imagine a scenario in which the borrower doesn't owe the money or shouldn't lose their house. To many judges, it is unfathomable that the borrower might owe the proceeds of the loan to some unidentified group of investors whose money was used illegally. It is hard to imagine that the borrower owes the money to somebody who is completely outside the chain of entities that are claiming the right to collect on the note or foreclose on the mortgage. Most judges don't understand recent rulings by trial judges where the court determined that Bank of America and others had no right to collect anything from the borrower. And judges are especially dismayed when they hear that the bank not only loses, required to return every dime it ever collected on that loan. And it is because of the bias in the court system against homeowners that TILA contains the nuclear option that was intended to keep the banks honest. Well, we all know that didn't work because the banks got even more dishonest. But the teeth that are in that law exist, and the U.S. Supreme Court only a month ago, said that TILA means what it says. Rescission does not require a lawsuit by the borrower to enforce it. It operates automatically by operation of law. The effect is to completely nullify the note and mortgage and creates a duty on the part of anyone holding the void note to return it canceled, and to further file a satisfaction of mortgage in the county record where the mortgage was recorded. According to TILA, the mortgage is void by operation of law. further effect is to require the return of all money that was made or paid at the so-called closing that wasn't a closing, because the real lender and the real compensation being... Sorry, I just got a message. The effect is to completely nullify the note and mortgage and creates a duty on the part of anyone holding the valid note to return it, canceled, and to file a satisfaction of mortgage. The further effect is to require the return of all money that was made or paid at the so-called closing that wasn't a closing, because the real lender and the real compensation being arranged by a dozen parties or more was never disclosed. And in many cases, there are real terms that were not disclosed either. The reset of mortgage payments to higher levels that in many cases was higher than the entire household income, carefully swept away by sales talk and promises that would never be kept, about refinancing when the property prices go even higher, a fact that was not a fact but a lie, a living lie. The courts got it wrong about TILA rescission. Hundreds of courts got it wrong. Trial courts, appellate courts, bankruptcy courts, you name it. Even Supreme Courts of states, they got it wrong. Those few of us who said they were wrong were ridiculed. Those courts arrogantly started with the premise that they could apply common law rules to a specific statutory remedy. They were wrong, and their premise was always wrong. If the statute is specific about something, the court has no right to change it. That is what separation of powers is all about. The legislature makes the law, not the court. And that's what Justice Scalia said in the Supreme Court opinion regarding rescission. But accepting their premise, it was easy to see why they made their error. In normal rescissions, you claim fraud, and then you give back whatever you got from the fraudster. And in exchange, you get from the fraudster whatever you paid or gave up. The purpose is to set the parties back where they were before the transaction was consummated. From that, the courts deduced that in order to rescind, you had to bring a lawsuit for fraud or some other unlawful act entitling you to rescind. TILA rescission is just the opposite. All you do is send a letter. The purpose of the TILA rescission is to give the consumer, the borrower, a chance to level the playing field and destroy the note and mortgage that they were induced to sign. A chance to cancel the deal with a letter in order to give the consumer an opportunity to get a loan from an honest lender without having his credit or his property encumbered by false claims. It is the lender, not the borrower, who must bring a lawsuit if the lender wants to allege facts and prove them that show that the rescission is not based upon inadequate disclosure, or if they want to allege some other grounds to challenge the rescission. In the meantime, the rescission is effective. And under TILA, if the so-called lender fails to bring that action within 20 days, they waive their defenses to the rescission. And to my knowledge, I've never seen a case in which a so-called lender or creditor has ever filed that 20-day action. Under common law, you would have to sue for removal of the mortgage from the chain of title. Under TILA, the mortgage is void by operation of law. The reason is that Congress wanted to give the borrower a chance to get the loan he did want from another lender, who then would have a first mortgage on the property with or without the cooperation of the prior alleged lender whose loan documents had been rescinded and therefore nullified. If the old mortgage was still there, the new lender couldn't close. That is why Congress wrote it that way. They put into the statutes that the lender must return the canceled note and file a satisfaction of mortgage, but that by operation of law, both were a nullity. And if they don't give you back the canceled note, what if they don't file a satisfaction of mortgage? Okay, then you got to sue. A quiet title or petition for mandatory injunction will take care of a reluctant lender on that point, which is a lawsuit, but if the lender is resisting, you have no choice. On the other hand, with that lawsuit, I think foreclosure defense lawyers ought to be thinking about damage actions against the predatory lenders who started this game in the first place. And it seems to me that the average amount of damages at this point appears to be $1.5 to $3 million, even on loans as low as $200,000. Under common law rescission, the promissory note is canceled only if you tender the money you borrowed or the rescission fails. That obviously is the opposite of what Congress said when it passed TILA, and that's what the U.S. Supreme Court said. You don't have to tender the money back. You don't have any obligation under TILA. All you have to do is send a letter, and it rescinds the note and the mortgage. The rest is up to whoever wants to make a claim on the so-called loan. The whole point was to cancel the old mortgage and note, and then give the borrower a clear chance to get financing elsewhere to settle the old debt to the old lender. You might still owe money to someone, but you are not required to hunt down the creditor, especially when they don't want to be found. The rescission is effective as of the date of rescission by letter, not when some judge enters an order allowing rescission. Judges have no discretion on this issue, and it doesn't need to be brought to them in order to have an effective TILA rescission. Under common law, the amount you had to tender back to the fraudster was only the amount left after deductions for the fraud that created the common law rescission. Just the two parties, you and the fraudster. TILA rescission is very different. The lender must give you back all the money you paid to anybody, including monies that were paid from closing or in any other fashion that was undisclosed. So any money paid or made as a result of your signature on the note and mortgage, all of that comes back to you. So if you paid points, mortgage, brokerage fee, appraisal fees, and other costs of closing, the lender must give you that in addition to whatever the lender received. This assumes, of course, that the lender is the lender, which is probably not the case in nearly all of those loan closings. The actual creditor is, at this moment, unidentified, and the banks want to keep it that way. So in addition to all that money, they have to give you back all the interest and principal you have ever paid them, plus potentially treble damages. All of that is before you are required or liable for any money to pay off any unknown creditor. First, they have to give you the money, and they have to give you the canceled note, and they have to file the satisfaction of mortgage. And then, and only then, might you be required to consider how you're going to pay somebody, but that's the rub for them. For the first time, they must reveal the identity of the real creditor if they want anybody to get paid. And they have to allow you access to that creditor. After comparing notes, there's no doubt in my mind that you and the creditor, if you get together, will jointly sue all the parties that defrauded both of you. Again, the point here is to clear the credit, liabilities, and title of the borrower so the borrower can get alternative financing and pay whatever debt is owed to the creditor, who is no longer a lender. The problem for the banks is that they really don't have any good way of presenting an actual creditor because of the fraudulent way they handled the money and the paperwork on Wall Street. There is a way to do it, but I don't really think the banks are willing to expose themselves, even if it means giving up on that money. So you see, the TILA rescission is very different from common law rescission, and the reason I keep harping on this and saying it over and over and over again is because, despite the Supreme Court ruling, despite articles by me and dozens of other lawyers and people, the confusion is still out there. People still think, I have to give back my house. You're not giving back your house to the bank. They never gave it to you. They gave you money. And actually, the whole problem is that the bank didn't give you the money. They were merely illegally using someone else's money. So the TILA rescission is a specialized remedy to create an environment where banks would police themselves rather than risk their right to collect on a loan or lose their right to foreclose on collateral and lose their right to be protected if the borrower declares bankruptcy. If the borrower rescinds the debt is unsecured and will be discharged in bankruptcy in the same manner as other debts. Don't forget, though, that if the house is unencumbered, it becomes an asset and it's worth money. You might not be able to declare bankruptcy. But there are pitfalls here that you should check with bankruptcy attorneys before you act on any of this. And by the way, let me remind you again that this is for general information only, and before you act on anything, you should contact an attorney who is licensed in the jurisdiction in which your property is located. So when the issue of rescission first came up years ago when I was writing on the subject, the biggest confusion was, do I have to give back the house to the bank? Even lawyers were thinking, well, you have to tender the house because you don't have the money. And the answer is, until a rescission, you don't have to give them the house and you don't have to give them the money. Until a rescission just ends that loan. And if they want to collect on it, they're going to have to find a basis to collect other than the note and the mortgage. So the answer is always no. You don't have to give the house to the bank. And even under common law rescission, you wouldn't have to give the bank the house as part of rescission because you didn't get the house from any bank, even if they did loan you the money. So what you are rescinding is the loan transaction. So, okay, I got some written questions here, and I got some people on the line. Let me see if I can get to some of these right now. And area code 920, first three digits, 219, what is your question?
The question is if you are already past your statute of limitations for the 3 year, but you discover the disclosures and you file within, and then you file, or you know, you send your notice of rescission, can they hide behind that you were past your statute of limitations, and what happens if they don't respond to you at all?
Okay. Big question is, when does the statute of limitations begin and when does it end? There are cases out there that say, appropriately, I think, that the statute doesn't start to run until you knew or should have known of the facts that the disclosure was wrong or improper or lacking or what have you. So theoretically, the whole point of that is that these banks should not profit by allowing time to run, which is incidentally one of the main reasons you see them not file for years or not pursue it for years. They should not be able to continue to withhold the information in order for the statute of limitations to run and then give you the information and tell you you should have known it. That is what they want to do. But I would say that given Scalia's opinion for the U.S. Supreme Court, I don't think that'll fly. I think the rescission can be filed within 3 years from the date that you knew or should have known of the information that caused you to file the rescission. And we go now to area code 562, first three digits, 394. What is your question?
Yep. My question is, I've been looking at the 12 CFR 226.23, the right of rescission, and it says, except for transactions described in paragraph F of this section, and then paragraph F says exempt transactions, a residential mortgage transaction. Can you talk about that?
It's different. The caller is referencing the fact that if the transaction is a purchase money first mortgage, it is theoretically not subject to rescission, but it is still subject to the disclosure requirements. But most of the transactions are not purely first money, first purchase money mortgages, they're in combination with HELOCs or they're refinancing or whatever, and therefore the ability to rescind, as pointed out by the Supreme Court, is completely present. Area code 770, first three digits 337. What is your question?
Yes, I had filed bankruptcy, unfortunately, and my loan was bought from, oh gosh, I can't remember. It's with Chase now. And I'm just wondering, because I didn't confirm that loan, that was the only loan I didn't confirm. It's basically out there as an unsecured debt from my bankruptcy a couple of years ago. Would I have a chance to do a rescission on this? This was bought by Chase about a year after I actually bought the house back in 2004, and I did fight them through foreclosure, and I did get a modification, which is, in my opinion, fraud modification because it says that Fannie Mae owns this house.
Okay.
So I'm just wondering what my possibilities would be with this.
There's too many factors in there for me to give you an intelligent answer. Somebody would have to go over everything that happened there. But the interesting thing about the procedures in the Truth in Lending Act is if you send a rescission letter out, that triggers their responsibility to file something against you within 20 days. They don't do it because they're alleging statute of limitations or that this was a purchase money first mortgage or whatever they're going to allege. That's a question of fact that they have to bring up. And they have to basically sue the homeowner as, you know, when I say they, I mean some creditor who is actually owed the money has to sue the homeowner saying that this rescission should not be allowed because, and then they would have to allege things, including the underlying transactions, which, from what we've seen, can never be proven. That's the best answer I could give you, but if you contact a local attorney, I see you're from Atlanta, somebody who knows bankruptcy and foreclosure, they would probably be able to answer your question better than I just did. And area code 401, first three digits 255, we have 60 seconds. You have a quick question. All right, we won't do that. One of the questions that that I'm seeing now, can I get my house back after foreclosure if I rescind it before the foreclosure? The answer is a big I don't know, but I think so. I think the facts of each case are going to produce different results. But I do think that there is an opportunity to get your house back after foreclosure if you had previously rescinded, if you have a copy of that and hopefully certified mail return receipt requested, then, you know, you might be able to do so. And with that, I'll see you next week. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for listening to our broadcast. We hope that you tell your friends about us and let them know that there is hope and help in this financial crisis. Tune in every week to The Neil Garfield Show for free information and advice and visit our blog daily at The Living Lines Blog. We provide support services, the latest strategies, analysis, expert consultations, testimony and declarations to use in your battle against the largest economic crime in human history. For information concerning Neil, the team at Living Lies, or the law firm, go to www.livinglies.wordpress.com or call 520-405-1688. The opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the host and should not be attributed to any other person or entity.